Yoga in all its forms has been a support for me in my life, through all the highs and lows. It's opened my mind and my heart in ways I never knew were possible. It has been a teacher, a taskmaster, and a friend. This podcast is an offering. I wish to share the teachings of yoga with you as a tool to help navigate life. Namaste, and welcome. Welcome. I'm so happy you're here. So I wanted to start off this episode with a quote from Ram Dass, wonderful spiritual teacher and guide, perfectly imperfect teacher and guide, Ram Dass. He's no longer in his physical body, but he was one of the many tireless teachers on the path. And his quote is this, one of his many is this: in each of us, there once was a fire. And for some of us, there seems as if there are only ashes now. But when we dig in the ashes, we find one ember. And very gently, we fan that ember. Blow on it, it gets brighter. And from that ember, we rebuild the fire. The only thing that is important is that ember. That's what you and I are here to celebrate. That though we've lived our life totally involved in the world, we know that we're of the spirit, Ram Dass. So that ember, for some reason, that quote found its way to me and the way quotes do these days. And I was thinking about, if you've listened to any of the recently previous episodes, I spoke of squats, and we're not going to go into squats in deep today, don't worry. But it was this idea, and even while I was thinking about the last episode, as I was preparing and recording it, I was back in that space of, why does this resistance to having the same energy around fanning the ember, you know, building this fire in me again? Because at times it can feel like we really are just ashes, but there's always a phoenix ready to rise from the pile of ashes, I truly believe, and have experienced. But what's up with this resistance? What's around it? You know, what's the flavor of it? What's it all about? What's it all about, Alfie? Is it just for the moment we live? But what is it all about? And I started to do a little digging into some things that I have read in the past, or maybe even spoken about in the past. And funnily enough, if that's a word, a student contacted me and said something along these same lines. While I was in the mix of this myself, this student reached out and said, you know, what was that thing that you talked about a happiness quota or whatever, and who was that? And so this student was going through something similar to me. Okay. So resistance is experienced as fear. And this is from Gay Hendricks, who wrote many books, but one is called The Big Leap. So I have a couple of thoughts from this wonderful fella. Resistance is experienced as fear. The degree of fear equates to the strength of resistance. Therefore, more fear we feel about a specific goal, desire, enterprise, the more certain we can be that that goal is important to us and to our growth of our soul. That's why we feel so much resistance. If it meant nothing to us, there'd be no resistance. That line is key. If it meant nothing to us, there'd be no resistance. We would just be like blasé about it. But because it has this power, this energy, because this resistance is so palpable and so frustrating, that's because we're meeting this, what he calls, there's this thermostat setting. So I'll go on. He says, and this isn't from anything in particular, but this is still from Gay Hendricks, The Big Leap. Each of us has an inner thermostat setting that determines how much love, success, and creativity we allow ourselves to enjoy. When we exceed our inner thermostat setting, we will often do something to sabotage ourselves, causing us to drop back into the old familiar zone where we feel secure. So this is, I'm very familiar with this in my life, in my many decades. Maybe someone else is too. This idea of self-sabotage. There's so many reasons why we give, you know, to ourselves of why we don't meet these expectations that we place in front of ourselves or these goals, or why we can never seem to get out of our own way. And I think that it has a lot to do with what's familiar. And it also has to do, I'm sure, it has to do with past experience. It has to do with old tapes that play in our heads. And remember, I talked to you about these old tapes that sound like you, but were actually placed in you by others, authoritative figures, parents, teachers, what have you. And it sounds like you, but these tapes didn't come from you. Because I truly believe that we love ourselves unconditionally. But life and life experiences have given us this, like if my life were a vinyl record album, I would only be playing the hits on the A side. And I think the B side of my record would be probably more filled with stuff that didn't really come from me or was given to me because other people had their own stuff to work on and they didn't. And I don't really think you can go through a life without other people's tapes in your head. I think that's the challenges. Those are the dragons that Joseph Campbell talks about that we're meant to be slaying. So I'm not saying that, oh, woe is me, you know, why couldn't I have had a life where, you know, I had 100% 365 nurturing parents and siblings and teachers and all of this. And, you know, that's not the way it's supposed to go. So because without the challenges, we don't have anything to overcome. And so then we really don't meet the warrior within. Okay. So the self-sabotaging has a definite flavor to it that is of these tapes that are from others and from other experiences. But it sounds like us. So we often will start to get uncomfortable when we're getting close to a goal that we've set for ourselves, or if we desire some sort of outcome or being of our nature. I had this recent experience, as I was talking about in the last few episodes, of being at Menla retreat in upstate New York. And I was doing a couple of retreats there that were strung together. It was wonderful. But there was something about getting up every day, having a drive to Menla, because I don't live far from there, so I would commute, and being amongst all these people that I don't know them, but I felt akin to them. We were there for the same reason or for the same purpose. I don't know what everybody's reason was being there, but you know, the purpose was wellness, and the purpose was to receive empowerments and to receive teachings and, okay, all of that, and to practice yoga and meditation and to learn, to study. And getting up every day for 6, 7, 8 days, whatever it was, 9 days, and going back and forth, I felt like I kept meeting myself, the true me, the me, oh yeah, there she is. This is what she does. This is what she studies. This is who she is, meaning me, you know, because it was in the container of that experience that I recalled my desires and the things that bring me happiness. And I have a lot of those things in my life, I'm happy to say, but I think I'm surprised by myself in that environment. I very often will sit in these Buddhist teachings and or these yoga intensives or whatever it may be, and I just literally will say to myself, what are you doing here? You know, I'll be at a kirtan weekend retreat and be like, this is what you do? Like, this is your thing? You know, less surprising for me is when I find myself at a painting workshop, you know, and with studying art. I'm totally jazzed over that. But it's these receiving these teachings and being a part of, you know, whatever is happening, I'm surprised that that's me. And when I have that invitation to that part of myself, I feel different. I feel full. I feel whole. I feel alive. I know what it is. I'm blowing on those embers. There it is in the ashes. There's this little ember, and that little ember is the fire inside of me. And that's what my fire looks like. And that's what my fire yearns for. And that's what my fire desires. And those are the goals of my fire, whatever that is. For me, it's study so that I can learn, so that I can share the teachings of yoga and Buddhism, because it's my belief that that will help. It's helped me, so it's my belief it will help others. So, but that's my fire. I don't think I have the ember and the blaze to be a famous artist, a famous painter. I paint because it makes me happy. I paint because it makes me meditative. It's a meditative state. I paint because I love to play with paint and I love to play with art supplies. I do love to play with yoga poses as well, but there's something richer and deeper in there for me. It feels like a calling. Okay, so why the self-sabotage? If you're loving this stuff, and if, you know, studying with this teacher or that doctor, you know, and you're doing a 300 squats, I mean, how come you can only do 30 when you get home? What is it about waking up some days and going, will I today? Will I do squats? I never question getting on my yoga mat. But the truth is, when I get on my yoga mat, I do allow the tapes in my head at times to get in the way, and then I resist maybe a stronger practice that day that I could have benefited from. But I'm on my yoga mat every day. There's no resistance there. That's my life. I've talked about that before. Gay Hendricks says that we have an upper limit problem, an internal threshold for the maximum degree of success and happiness you'll allow yourself to experience. When we achieve high degrees of success in our careers, relationships, and other areas of life, we'll begin to feel discomfort as we near that threshold, and this triggers self-sabotaging behaviors. Okay, again, that's from Gay Hendricks. So just as we start to get towards that upper limit, just as we start to get in touch with that inner thermostat setting, we're reaching this high degree of happiness, all of a sudden, we trigger something. What is that something that gets triggered? That's the question. It's different in everybody. That's why I brought up the old tapes, because something is in there that gets triggered, where maybe somebody said to you once, oh, you could never do that. And then you believed that about yourself. And sometimes I think, you know, that we actually have a fear of success. You know, people say, well, it's a fear of failure. I don't think we fear failure. I think we're actually really cozy with failure. I think we're familiar with that discomfort. I think we fear success. I don't know what's in that fear, but I know that resistance plays a huge part in it. And there's a wonderful book I've talked about before. It's called The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. And it's a little book. You could read it in an afternoon. It's quite wonderful. And he talks about resistance. And he says from his book, have you ever brought home a treadmill and let it gather dust? Ever quit a diet, a course of yoga, a meditation practice? Have you ever bailed out on a call to embark upon a spiritual practice? Dedicate yourself to a humanitarian calling. Commit your life to the service of others. Have you ever wanted to be a mother, a doctor, an advocate for the weak and helpless? To run for office, crusade for the planet, campaign for world peace, or to preserve the environment? Late at night, have you experienced a vision of the person you might become? The work you could accomplish? The realized being you were meant to be? Are you a writer who doesn't write? A painter who doesn't paint? An entrepreneur who never starts a venture? Then you know what resistance is. It's everything. It's there all the time. And his entire book, which again is very small, and like I said, you can read it in an afternoon and it'll change your life. What it did for me many years ago when I discovered it was it introduced me to the concept of resistance. And like anything else, like with Gay Hendricks saying, hey, you've got this in a thermostat setting. Get to know it. Find out where it's set. It's set in different places for different achievements, for different desires. But you have to get to know it. You can't continue to succumb to failure. And you must recognize that the voices in your head are not yours. They're somebody else's who was not killing it at their life and thought that they would maybe throw some water on your embers and put out your dreams. Well, that's not acceptable. That ember is in there. Stoke the fire of your own inner being. You know what it is you want to do. You know what it is you desire. This is not a dress rehearsal. This is it. You already won the first prize. You were incarnated in a precious human life form, as His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama says. Go for it. I mean, you got this life. It's not easy. Everybody struggles in different ways in their life. But that ember is in there, and you want to stoke that fire. Just to go on about resistance, he has a list in the beginning of the book, Stephen Pressfield, and it says it's called Resistance Greatest Hits. And he says the following is a list in no particular order of those activities that most commonly elicit resistance. The pursuit of any calling in writing, painting, music, film, dance, or any creative art, however marginal or unconventional. The launching of any entrepreneurial venture or enterprise for profit or otherwise. Any diet or health regimen. Any program of spiritual advancement. Any activity whose aim is tighter abdominals. Any course or program designed to overcome an own unwholesome habit or addiction. Education of every kind. Any act of political, moral, or ethical courage, including the decision to change for the better some unworthy pattern of thought or conduct in ourselves. The undertaking of any enterprise or endeavor whose aim is to help others. Any act that entails commitment of the heart, the decision to get married, to have a child, to weather a rocky patch in a relationship. The taking of any principled stand in the face of adversity. In other words, he says, any act that rejects immediate gratification in favor of long-term growth, health, or integrity. Or, expressed in another way, any act that derives from our higher nature instead of our lower. Any of these will elicit resistance. And as I said, the rest of the book is about characterizing resistance and showing you where it comes up. Stephen Pressfield wrote the book, so clearly he is a writer. And he wrote a famous book that became, or a famous screenplay, and now I've just lost the name of it, but it's with Matt Damon, And again, I've lost the name of it. I think it's called The Legend of Bagger Vance. And Matt Damon, I think it's got something to do with golfing. I'm not sure. But that's what broke him through. I think of yoga asanas when I think of this discomfort around our upper limit problem. And when we feel the discomfort at that threshold, it triggers self-sabotage. And just follow me on this thought, if you will. But yoga asanas, the postures, the physical practice of yoga, they're not meant to be uncomfortable. We're not meant to take our practice, and I've talked about this before, in a way that elicits any kind of pain. But it is a practice. You are physically using the body. If you are in proper alignment, you will be able to hold the pose and build strength and endurance and stamina longer than you would if you are not in proper alignment or using props. That's for certain. But as I experienced as a student and a teacher of yoga asana, holding warrior two pose, for instance, which is a standing pose, and the arms are up shoulder height, and sometimes our shoulders can feel like our weakest point in our body. But as we hold the pose in warrior two, with the arms raised, and the knee is bent in line with the ankle, we can start to get uncomfortable. Like, enough already. You know, our shoulders start to burn, our arms start to shake, maybe our thighs start to cramp up, our mind starts to wander. We start, you know, how long is it? Did the teacher forget that he or she was teaching a class? Like, you know, did they go to the bathroom? Did they take a call? Why are we still in this pose? You know, it could be 100 things I could be doing right now. My to-do list is forever. All of these are signs of discomfort. And the beauty of the yoga asana practice is that it is meditative action. It is awareness and witnessing of the mind while practicing the physical postures, so that we can recognize our threshold for discomfort. We can recognize where we go, what we do, what our narrative is when we want out of the pose. Because very often, reaching a goal that you desire is going to require forging through a rough patch, forging through some discomfort. You've got to get over that threshold in order to get to the other side and say, oh, look at this. I did it. I'm here. I got through that. And you need to continue to do that, to forge through the resistance multiple times so that you can build the neural pathways that say, again and again and again, huh, look at that. Here I am. I did it. And that fire, that little ember, will turn into a blaze within you. And I promise you, you will become unstoppable and passionate and inspiring to others. You will also backslide. You will also have moments when resistance will rear its head out of the blue. You'll think you have nailed that thing. And then there it is again. And that is to show you your resilience. That is to test you, to remind you of your strength, of your endurance, of your dedication, of your commitment to this thing that you so desire. So Paulo Coelho, who wrote The Alchemist, says, "And when you want something, all the universe conspires in helping you to achieve it." You know why I think that is? Because the universe is us, and we are the universe. We are a microcosm of the macrocosm of the universe. And when we get out of our own way, we realize that everything around us is conspiring to help us achieve whatever it is we want. If we can get in line, recognize the signs, show up for our own lives, blow on that ember, everything will be revealed to you, and you will really recognize the fullness of your life and what you are capable of. There isn't anybody, well, that's a hard thing to say today. So forgive me if this sounds like something coming from a privileged white female later in life. I know that things are really challenging out there today. And I know that the world is a place full of suffering. And I know that there feels like there are things happening in the world and to the world that are just so out of our control. And that we can feel helpless and hopeless just by looking at the newspaper on a random morning. There's so much pain and so much suffering. And I know each of us have personal challenges and struggles in our own life. So I share none of these things lightly. Go read this book, go read that book, listen to this quote, and you'll be fine and you'll just be skipping through life. That's not the point. The point is, I believe that when you stoke the ember in your soul, you will discover the truth of why we are all here. And that is to serve, to love, and to discover within yourself what you may not have realized was possible before, which is you can make a difference right there where you are. It may seem like these atrocities are happening far away, but you make a difference in your life right in your way that you show up for yourself, the way that you live in your home, the way that you serve in your community. It matters. You matter. Your practice matters. What we've seen cannot be unseen. What we know cannot be unknown. Don't look away from what's happening in the world. Look within yourself, and you will see that you matter and you can serve in a way that helps. Don't let these atrocities hobble you. Stoke the ember. Stand up for humanity. You may think opening a yoga mat or sitting on a meditation cushion or listening to a podcast isn't doing anything. I promise you, it is. It's chiseling away at the fear. And it's allowing you to have the courage and the bravery and the wisdom to stand up and take care of all the sentient beings. Because if one person is suffering, if one sentient being is suffering in this world, we cannot be fully at peace within ourselves. So do what you can and know that whatever you're doing to support your happiness is so that you can shine your bright light on others. Hands at the heart center. May all beings be happy and peaceful. May all beings be healthy and strong. May all beings be safe and protected. May all beings live with ease. Namaste.